To the non-scientists, science can be a little confusing. Cool, yeah, but it can be difficult to understand the latest research findings and how significant they really are. That's where science writers and reporters come in, bringing the compelling stories from the scientific world to the public while trying to capture the nuances of the latest research. And to help those journalists become better at their job or get into it in the first place, there's a new book. It's called The Craft of Science Writing, Selections from the Open Notebook. Madison-based science journalist Siri Carpenter edited that book. She's co-founder and editor-in-chief of The Open Notebook. That's a nonprofit resource for science writers. She joins me now in the studio. Siri, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob.
Before we get into how science reporters work, can you flip things around to the people who read their work? Can you talk about the sort of things we get in the lay public from the work that you and your colleagues do?
Sure, absolutely. Well, as I'm sure you've seen, we are all just awash in information about science, and science really touches virtually every part of our lives. And it can be difficult to make sense of that. Not only is it complicated, but also there is a lot of misinformation floating around. There's fake news floating around, and it can be difficult to dissect all of that and understand it.
Seems like one of the biggest challenges for a science writer would be to take things from the world of science, which is sometimes there are gray areas. There's not necessarily a narrative. It might be a slight statistical difference here and there. Bring it into the world of journalism, where we want a story. We want a beginning and an end and a middle, and to make it work on both levels. How do you navigate that challenge?
That's absolutely right. That is a big challenge of science journalism, both making difficult material understandable, making it interesting, and giving people a balanced and nuanced sense of what's important, what they should be paying attention to, as well as making it entertaining.
Looking at the book and at the online open notebook, it seems clear that a lot of science journalists think a lot about what they're doing and want to get better at it. Can you talk about the origins of the open notebook a little?
Sure. The Open Notebook is a nonprofit that my friend and colleague Jeannie Erdman and I started just about 10 years ago, going on 10 years ago. And we started it because we wanted to get a glimpse behind the curtain about how some of the science writers that we admired most did their work. And so we started doing a series of interviews with science journalists to learn the stories behind the stories. And over time, we expanded the project to do other kinds of things as well.
Are there similar stories you hear from your colleagues out there in the world, the challenges that they keep running into again and again?
Yeah, over and over again, there are certain things that we hear. One is the challenge of understanding how to pitch a story to sell it to an editor in the first place. And what we always say is, if you want to tell your story to an audience, first you need to sell it to an editor. A lot of science journalists are freelancers, so that means that they're writing pitch letters to editors and hoping to be able to place a story so that they can get a contract to go and report that story. And that is a kind of a dark art, pitching, and so we try to shed light on that. Another aspect of science writing that I see over and over again and that I've experienced myself is what people call the imposter syndrome. This feeling that you just are not measuring up, and sooner or later you're going to be revealed as a fraud. And I think partly where that comes from is that we see what's going on inside our own heads. We're dealing with difficult, complicated material that takes time to understand and figure out, and then figure out how to write about it. And we worry that we're the only ones who are that confused, when in fact, that's what we're all experiencing.
Part of the challenge there, though, and you talk about this, and your contributors talk about this in the book, the idea that you want to think as much like a scientist as possible, maybe even be a scientist in some cases. You want to be as much of a journalist as possible, and those aren't always the same role, and it's hard to master both of them.
That's true. It's not the same role. Journalists, science journalists and scientists share a lot in common. Both professions are driven by curiosity about a search for some kind of truth, by a series of actions that you take to try to obtain information, test that information, report it out accurately. But science journalists are not, I mean, some may be trained as scientists, but their role is not to be scientists. And their role is also not to simply translate science for lay people. It's not to simply strip out the jargon and make something understandable, but rather to bring analysis and critical thought to what they're reporting on.
Right. And something I see a lot in science reporting is, okay, we're talking to the people who did this particular research. Now we go to other people, other experts in the field and talk to them. And, you know, they may poke holes in it. They may agree. They may put it into context, into a wider context of the other research that's out there. So you're contributing something beyond just here's what this research says.
Exactly. You're trying to do some kind of synthesis and analysis and bring your own observations from doing that reporting to the work that you're bringing to the public.
Talking to Siri Carpenter, editor-in-chief of the nonprofit resource for science writers called The Open Notebook. She is the editor of the new book, The Craft of Science Writing, Selections from The Open Notebook. Well, we have a big science story in the news here in Wisconsin, coronavirus, something I wonder about. I'm not a science writer, but we talk about science issues and disease issues. How do we talk about this in a way that's serious but doesn't exaggerate threats, doesn't needlessly scare people? How do you wrestle with that issue?
That's a really good example of an area where it's important for people who want to be critical consumers of information about science to have some understanding of how to think about science and how to think about how journalists do their work. As you know, just this afternoon, we learned that we've now seen the first case of the coronavirus in Wisconsin. And it's something that will probably throw some people into kind of a panic. And so it's important for people to understand, how do you think about risk when we're thinking about health risks or any kind of risk? What's the right way to think about your own risk or the risks facing your community or your family? In our book, there's a chapter that talks about reporting on risk and about how people who are reporting on risk, journalists who are reporting on risk, have to gather information, have to dispel misinformation, have to find the right experts in order to understand the true nature of risk, have to think about things like with the coronavirus, how does this risk that an individual in Wisconsin might face of being infected with coronavirus, how does that compare with, say, their risk of being infected with the seasonal flu, which at this point is still much greater, of course.
And how do you and other contributors deal with that wider issue of risk? We might say the chance of disease X is doubled by this behavior. That can mean a lot of different things given what the initial risk is. How do you contextualize
that? That's exactly right. That's this concept of relative risk and absolute risk is the term that scientists use. If you have double the chance of such and such disease outcome, if you are, let's say, if you're a smoker and the initial risk is 0.00000001%, and then it's doubled, that's very different than if the initial risk was, you had a 25% risk and now you have a 50% risk. And so when we talk about risks, whether they're health risks or environmental risks, we have to be able to understand that difference in order to really convey the magnitude and meaningfulness of the risk.
Now, a fun part of the book, sometimes there's a science story like coronavirus that, okay, we see this as a story. But a fun part for you and some of the other people in the book is when you see that thing, it's not front page news, but you get that whiff that there's something interesting here. There's a story here. What's your radar for that? How do you detect those?
Right. When you just have a feeling that you have to tell this story, and sometimes you don't know exactly what it is.
Like a panda is one example.
Right. Yeah, right. That's right. There's a story by Maggie Kurth Baker that Ed Yong interviewed her about this panda named Pan Pan, who is described as the panda that was really, really good at sex.
Right.
And it's the progenitor of many of the pandas living in captivity today. And Maggie was initially asked to write this article for 538 that would just be a small little database explainer. And it turned into this long project that really blew up into something really beautiful and much more narrative. And it was just something that she couldn't let go the more she dug into it.
Another great point, just at our last minute, if you're writing a crime story about a shooting, one of the contributors gives us an example. I can't remember which one. You don't have to explain to somebody what a gun is. If you're doing something on neutrinos, you could say it in a sentence, but then you have to establish what the things are to begin with.
That's right. Yeah, the explaining things part of science writing is both one of the joys and one of the frustrations, I think, for every science writer, explaining complex processes and figuring out how little can you get away with explaining, because you could go down a rabbit hole and you could explain every little detail about a process and write a PhD dissertation on it. But that's not normally what your job is as a science writer. And so figuring out how can you, what are the basics that your readers need, and what can you give them to make sure that they can understand and appreciate the story without putting them to sleep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing this with us. A great insight into the world of the science writer.
Thank you very much.
That's Madison-based science journalist Siri Carpenter. She's co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Science Writing Resource. It's online. It's called The Open Notebook. And we talked to her today about a new book that she edited, The Craft of Science Writing, Selections from The Open Notebook. If you have a favorite piece of science writing or science writer, let us know about it. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR or email ideas@WPR.org.